got a question for you. Raise your hand if you still hold out hope that things are going to freeze up nice and solid in the next couple of months. Enough snowfall to get out on snow machine and then be able to maybe hunt up a few winter caribou for the freezer. I know you can't see me right now, but trust me when I say I'm wildly waving both arms in the air. Remember that if you're driving right now and hear this, keep one hand on the wheel so that you'll actually have a later on during which to hunt caribou, once we get that ice and snow. Honestly, I consider myself a very devout optimist. I truly believe that before all is said and done, and spring is once more here, we'll have the opportunity to harvest caribou, for those of us who would like to do just that. At this juncture, I might toss out a reminder to have a 2016 hunting license, something I hope you picked up a month ago, and the necessary tags to hunt caribou. Of course, one of the really cool things about it getting farther into the season is that the days are getting longer with each passing day, something along the lines of 5 minutes or more a day. During February and March, we really start to see our days start to lengthen. And as I consider longer days in winter caribou and maybe having the chance to hunt them, it also has me to thinking about really taking advantage of the opportunity, if and when it gets here, and hauling along a tent and staying for a few days. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. How many of you get out and camp in the winter? How many of you have thought about trying it but haven't gotten around to it yet? And I'm not talking about going to a little cabin somewhere and firing up the wood stove, though that's certainly an admirable thing to do also. No, I'm talking about pitching a tent and crawling into a sleeping bag for the night, even though there's snow on the ground and the mercury might be a bit deeper in the glass than most people would prefer when staying in a tent. The fact is, camping does not have to cease during our colder months, though for most folks, nights spent camping do seem to ebb in correlation to the dropping of that mercury. With some small but obvious differences, it's really no different than summer. There are always things to deal with. When it's warm, it's bugs and bears. In the winter, it's all about staying warm. People camp for various reasons, irrespective of the season. For some, it's simply camping for camping's sake, and that's perfectly fine. I have shared before that my camping often has something else at the heart of it, such as for the purposes of hunting or fishing. It will probably come as no surprise, then, that my winter camping efforts have always centered around hunting, such as me plotting and scheming to caribou hunt in the coming months. Camping is fun, yes, but in this case its purpose will be to keep me out there long enough to fill my freezer. That said, winter camping can actually be a great idea and for a whole bevy of reasons. For one thing, the winter landscape can be incredibly beautiful, and in a way and on a scale that's completely different from other times of the year. There is something about the pristine nature and peacefulness of the Alaskan wilderness under a new blanket of snow and blue skies that can be both breathtaking and calming to the soul all at the same time. Also, the things we have to consider in the summer, the aforementioned bugs and bears, are completely absent. Bugs and bears aren't the only things absent. When was the last time winter camping drew the crowds that you sometimes see in the summer? It just doesn't happen. When you add in some of the really great outdoor activities you can only do in the winter, you can begin to see that there are a number of very solid reasons to give thought to winter camping. A discussion of winter camping could involve a very long list of topics that would cover much more than the allotted time for a single episode. I'd like to confine consideration for today to three things. What you'll be in, the tent. What you'll be on, a mattress pad. And what you'll be in, the sleeping bag. Let's start with tents. A whole lot of tents that people in Alaska use are considered three-season tents. I have often wondered, well, what makes a tent a four-season tent? So I did a bit of online research for this episode. According to one online camping-focused website, the question of the difference between a four-season tent and a three-season tent is a good one, because, according to them, the distinction is blurry. Moreover, they say the phrase four-season tent is misleading, since it refers specifically to winter tents, which are tents you might not want to use the rest of the year because they can be too heavy or too hot. As near as I can discern from what I've read, the chief differences between winter tents and three-season tents are with regards to wind resistance and the ability to withstand heavy snowfall. Consequently, designated winter tents come with an extra rigid exoskeleton, have steeply angled sides, no rainfly, and a hefty price tag. Basically, a true winter tent, in the fullest sense, is something that you'd use for base camps connected to serious mountain climbing. I am sure there are people around the area who have winter tents. I am not sure I have ever actually seen one in use. So that leaves us with the following. It's okay to use your three-season tent for winter camping, providing it's a solid quality tent that will be able to deal with winds and possible moderate snowfall. While the weather can be unpredictable, it's probably a safe bet that no one plans a winter camping trip for a time when severe winter weather is forecast. So while the unexpected can happen, it's easy enough to take a look at the forecast and pick times and dates that are more agreeable to pitching a tent on a winter day. I do think there are some things to think about with tents in the winter. These are my thoughts. They are probably worth every penny you're paying to listen to today's episode. Because warmth is the name of the game, tents made of solid material, rather than a mostly mesh body, are more desirable. Also, even though rain shouldn't be a consideration, a rainfly that goes all the way to the ground is nice in that it provides yet another layer to keep the wind off you. Freestanding tents are good in that staking situations aren't always as easy to find as during the warmer months. Tent design should be considered. You want something that's going to be able to easily shed a bit of snowfall to combat weight buildup. Geodesic designs with steep walls and heavy-duty poles are a good bet here. Extra tie-out points are nice to have for whatever means you do have to be able to secure the tent. And a nice large vestibule is great for keeping as much moisture out of the tent as possible. Fact is, true winter tents are overbuilt for what most of us would do for winter camping. If you've got the coin and the itch, by all means go ahead and buy a winter tent. But one is most assuredly not needed to participate in winter camping. Once you have a tent to climb into, you're left with the matter of what you'll put on the ground that you'll be sleeping on. I'm talking about a sleeping pad. Pad warmth can vary quite a bit depending on thickness and type of insulating material. Pads come with R values, like the insulation for your house. And like with your house, the higher the R value, the warmer it will stay. I have read that an R value of at least 4 is recommended for winter camping. My own pad, which I've talked about on here before, is a ClimateStatic V Lux, easily the most comfortable sleeping pad I've ever slept on. It's big, packs small, and is very comfortable. The company is fairly new, and when I bought mine, they had an insulated model available, though it was smaller in size. So I opted for the larger size, preferring comfort that way, and knowing that most of my camping would not be winter camping. My particular pad has an R rating of 1.5, while the insulated one has an R value of 4.5. The company has since come out with a larger insulated pad, and I likely would have gone that route had it been available at the time that I purchased. One other mention on pads. Consider buying and using a thin, closed-cell foam pad as well. I've had issues with the bottom of my sleeping bag being damp to wet in the morning. I have read this is because there is not enough insulation. I also read that a thin foam pad used as a layer can eliminate that from happening. I've tried it a handful of times now, and it seems to make a difference. And then there's what you will climb into, your sleeping bag. There's really no way around having the right sleeping bag for the job. If you want to stay warm, you need to have a bag that's designed to provide warmth in cold temperatures. Sleeping bags have ratings applied to them in the form of a temperature rating. A bag's temperature rating identifies the lowest temperature at which a bag is meant to keep the average sleeper warm. Please keep in mind that these ratings assume that you are wearing a layer of long underwear and using a sleeping pad under your bag. If you insist on sleeping en natural, then consider going with a heavier bag. Thus, a 20-degree bag means that most users should remain fairly comfortable if the temperature drops to no lower than 20 degrees. Also remember that your mileage may vary. Body metabolism varies from person to person, and sleeping bag temperature ratings vary from one manufacturer to the next. Ratings are meant as a general guide to get you in the ballpark when purchasing a sleeping bag. My advice is to hold out for a bag that's rated to at least 0 degrees, and always try to get bags made of synthetic materials. If you've never tried winter camping but thought that you might, this just might be the winter to check that off your bucket list, whereas it's really a winter that's not. Just give due diligence to what you will sleep in, on, and in, and that will go a long ways toward making your winter camping experience a pleasant one. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.